May this interview be of service. May this concert be of service. Everything, may it be of service. Instead of for a concert, I don't want people to come and say, wow, she's such a good musician, or she's got such great vocals and her musicians are so amazing. I want people to come and say, wow, I feel more like myself. I feel something in my heart has shifted. I feel so. This is my goal that I'm very devoted to, and I have to continue to remind myself, because I have a mind, I have desires, but it's a daily practice. It's a moment to moment practice.
Hallo Herz, schön, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ich bin Nadine Gerhardt und dieser Podcast ist mein absolutes Herzensprojekt, um dich zu inspirieren auf deinem ganz individuellen Weg zu mehr Fülle, Liebe und Lebensfreude. Satnam de Wunder. Heute geht es um das Thema Hingabe. Und zu diesem Thema habe ich die perfekte Interviewpartnerin. Dazu machen wir einen Ausflug in die USA, und zwar zur amerikanischen Mantra-Sängerin Satnam Kaur. Und du merkst vielleicht schon an meiner Stimme, dass ich ein wenig berührt bin, und ich erzähle auch gleich warum. Satnam Kaur wurde 2019 für die American Grammy Awards nominiert. Sie zählt zu den weltweit meistgehörtesten Mantrasängerinnen. Ihre Mantra-Version von Om Namo Gurudev Namo wurde allein auf YouTube, da gibt es nämlich ja noch Spotify und iTunes und so weiter, über 21 Millionen Mal geklickt. Satnam Kaurs Engelstimme ist unvergleichlich und in ihr schwingt so viel Liebe. Satnam ist in die Kundalini-Yoga- und Sikh-Tradition hineingeboren und daher ist sie auch sehr verbunden mit den Gurumukhi-Mantras, die du immer wieder im Kundalini-Yoga hörst und chantest. Und sie hat mittlerweile 17 Alben produziert. Ihr allerneuestes Album heißt Nirankar. Und das wurde vor 8 Wochen veröffentlicht und das ist so, so herzöffnend. Und ja, warum laufen mir die Tränen? Warum bin ich so berührt? Du darfst wissen, dass hier dieses Interview ist mein allererstes Interview gewesen. Ich hatte noch nicht mal ein Mikro. Da gab es noch nicht mal den Heite Besonic Podcast. Er war nur geplant. Und wie du weißt, vertraue ich sehr meiner Intuition und höre darauf, wann welche Episode und damit auch welches Interview veröffentlicht werden soll und wo es noch keinen Impuls gibt. Und genau bei diesem Interview gab es lange, lange keinen Impuls. Das Interview war im März 2019. Das ist, was ich sage jetzt. What? Ja, es war im März 2019. Und ich habe überhaupt nicht verstanden, warum. Also es gab die ganze Zeit keinen Impuls. Bis vorhin. Das Interview mit Satnam fand ein paar Wochen vor einem ausverkauften Konzert in Deutschland statt. Und zwar in Neu-Isenburg, wo ich verrückterweise seit einem halben Jahr wohne. Ich habe Satnam nach dem offiziellen Teil des Interviews erzählt, dass ich mit Freunden auf ihr Konzert komme und dass unsere schwerkranke Freundin Andrea uns begleiten wird. Und wenn du fleißiger Heiter bis Sonic Podcast-Hörer oder Hörerin bist, dann kennst du Andrea. Denn sie ist der eigentliche Grund, warum es diesen Podcast hier überhaupt gibt. Denn sie hat mir von der anderen Seite des Regenbogens metaphysisch immer wieder mitgeteilt, dass es Zeit ist für diesen Podcast hier. Und mit ihr habe ich auch relativ zum Start dieses Podcasts eine 5-teilige Interviewreihe gemacht zum Thema Rendezvous mit dem Tod, wo es um bewusstes Sterben ging. Zu diesem Zeitpunkt der Veröffentlichung von dieser fünfteiligen Reihe hat sie Andrea schon ihren irdischen Körper verlassen und ist nach Hause gegangen. Das Nottam-Chor-Konzert, zu dem sie im Rollstuhl hingefahren wurde von uns, und sie hatte an diesem Tag so starke Schmerzen, war das letzte Mal, war das letzte Mal, als sie aus dem Krankenhaus bzw. aus dem Hospiz rausgekommen ist. Das macht dieses Konzert und das Interview von Snatter so besonders. Und an diesem Abend des Konzerts hat sie ein Mantra gespielt. Sie hat natürlich ganz viele Mantras gespielt, ja. Aber es gab ein Mantra, dieses eine Mantra, Akal. Und Akal ist ein Mantra, was uns daran erinnern möchte, dass wir als Seele unsterblich sind. Und was Sterbende im Sterbeprozess hilft, nach Hause zu gehen. Und Snatam hat an diesem einen Abend eine Version gespielt, die ganz neu war, die keiner kannte und die nicht auf dem Beloved-Album drauf war, was sie vor 3 Jahren veröffentlicht hat. Und diese Mantra-Version, die verbindet jede Zelle meines Körpers mit Andrea. Und als ich eben so nebenbei mal bei Snatam vorbeigeschaut habe, habe ich entdeckt, dass sie vor 8 Wochen ein ganz neues Album namens Nilanka rausgebracht hat. Und rate mal, was Natan 3 Jahre später für ein Mantra in dieses neue Album gepackt hat. Diese eine Mantra-Version von Akal. Und es ist so eine wunderschöne Version. Und wenn du dir jetzt noch bis zum Schluss dieses wundervolle Interview mit Snatam Kaur anhörst, dann, mir läuft so die Nase, dann wird sie unter anderem auch von einem Mantra-Album erzählen. Moment, ich muss mal kurz Pause machen und mir die Nase schneuzen. Sorry. Da bin ich wieder. Also, wenn du dir bis zum Schluss dieses wundervolle Interview mit Snatam Kaur anhörst, dann wird sie unter anderem auch von einem Mantra-Album erzählen, was Frauen unterstützt, die den Wunsch in sich tragen, Mama zu werden. Und das ist die perfekte Überleitung zum kommenden Podcast-Thema am 8.8., nämlich das Thema Kinderwunscherfüllung. Und warum berührt mich das so, so sehr? Es zeigt mir, dass Leben und Tod so nah beieinander sind. Wenn etwas stirbt, kommt etwas Neues. Es ist der Lauf des Lebens. Oder wie wir im Kundalini-Yoga sagen, Satanama. Es zeigt mir, dass das Leben so perfekt ist, dass es nichts braucht, dass das Leben genauso, wie es richtig ist, durch dich hindurch wirken möchte, wenn du es zulässt. Du musst dich einfach nur Trommelwirbel. Du musst dich einfach nur hingeben. Ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude und Berührung mit diesem tollen Interview mit Snatam Kaur.
I'm very, very happy that we meet each other here. And my first question, how did you get to your task, to your calling?
Yes, thank you. I, as you said, grew up in the Kundalini yoga and Sikh tradition. And which mantras, sacred chants are a key part of the practice. And I learned at a very young age how powerful these chants are to heal and shift energy, to bring joy. And so as I grew up, these chants became a part of my life and I developed a very close relationship with them. And then in my late 20s, I became a certified Kundalini yoga teacher. And there was this shift that happened for me, in which I transformed, and I wanted to be able to teach and to give these mantras to people. And I began to see how that was possible through the teaching of Kundalini Yoga and sharing sacred chants within that medium. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the a very important time in my life. Mm-hmm. And right around this time as well, I had been inspired by Yogi Bhajan, who is the founder of Kundalini Yoga, and who also brought the Sikh tradition to the West. And he organized these peace prayer days where people would come from all different religions and pray for peace and share their songs of peace from their tradition. And I saw how powerful this was as an act of prayer. And I saw that I could, as a Sikh woman, bring my chants out to the world, that they could be for people of all walks of life, and that it was important to do so for the planet and for bringing peace as my work of peace. So it all became very clear around this time that this was my work.
Mm-hmm. So you also teach children, huh?
Yes, I do. I've always been very drawn to teaching children. I just enjoy being around them, for one. And I learned also from my spiritual teacher, Yogi Bhajan. I observed him through classes and community, that he would relate to children on a soul-to-soul level. He wouldn't look down on them as being less capable of spiritual growth. And sometimes he was a little bit tough with with kids. He'd challenge them. And I found this to be also the case with myself. He looked at me and saw me as a soul. And I just was so inspired by this and realized in my own experience of teaching children that when I related to them on this soul-to-soul level, that all was possible, that I could really convey and teach them concepts from yoga, meditation, and the Sikh tradition that would have a lasting impact on their lives, give them actual tools, you know, for finding their own inner courage, dealing with stress like all of us have to. Yeah. There are some very powerful tools within the Kundalini Yoga and Sikh tradition. And so I felt very called to teach children. I made a video, a yoga class video for children.
Oh, wow.
To watch and do their own yoga practice every day. Mm. Called Shanti the Yogi.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Great. So yeah. How do you challenge kids, or how did it Yogi Bhajan? Is it like more physical or?
For example, I am teaching a music class for children where I teach them how to sing. And, you know, the thing about children is that they are young and they have the whole world in front of them, and they can do anything that they choose to. So, you know, there was this one little boy in my class. He was kind of the rough and tumble guy. And I was teaching a singing class, and I asked him to sing, and he looked at me as if I was crazy at first. And so did the other kids, like, don't you know, like, he can't sing. And he looked at me like, don't you know, I can't sing, you know? And I just pushed ahead and I said, come on, let's hear you. And it was really beautiful because he actually did sing. And he did have that experience. So that's the beautiful thing about children, is they don't have any limitations.
Yes.
And that's how I push children. I don't see the limitation that they have created, or that parents have created for them.
Fantastic. Wow. And what does this way mean for your everyday life look like?
Wow. Okay.
Wake up very early. you have satna in the morning, or yeah. What are the challenges for you?
Yeah. I am very devoted to my early morning sadhana practice. Mm-hmm. I feel that it's what keeps me alive. It's what keeps me creative. It's the best kind of vocal support that I can do, because my vocals have less to do with the vocal cords, mm-hmm. But more to do with just connecting with spirit. Mm-hmm. And then when I sing, it's not really about if I'm catching high notes or doing something technically fancy. It's about connecting with spirit. So my early morning practice is super key for that. I do yoga and I meditate and I chant every morning. Even some mornings when my alarm clock didn't wake me up or something, I always get something in, because it's just a rhythm that I've been with for so long, and that helps me so much. So I do that. And I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I'm married. So then, I'm helping my daughter get ready for school. My husband and I are working together to do that. And then my husband and I actually run our own touring business, where to be able to do all of these tours and travel all over the world. So then my husband and I work together during the day, and at night our daughter comes home and we have an evening together, and we meditate together at the end of the day.
Daughter?
Yes, with all three of us, we meditate. We do the Sata Nama meditation, Kirtan Kriya.
Yeah.
And this is really beautiful. And then afterwards, after we've meditated, we share together. Each person takes a turn to share an awesome moment in their day, and then a not so awesome moment in their day. And this is our routine. And I'm definitely in my spiritual path and in my practice. It's definitely about family. It's not like I have my spiritual practice off to the side and then my family life. I'm often practicing with my husband in the early mornings before the sun rises. We're practicing with our daughter, because these spiritual concepts are so helpful for, day-to-day life and harmony, communication, kind of keeping the boat afloat, so to speak.
So it's also beautiful to do satna with your husband in the morning. So it's a very good start.
Yes, we, it's been a really lovely thing to be able to practice with him. And it's also really important to, keep finding ways to spend special time together. So sometimes that's our special time together.
So how is working together if you work all day with your husband? What are the challenges?
We have worked on this for quite a few years. At first, we got into a lot more fights than we do now. we're both really passionate about what we do, and we both love the spiritual path. And we realized early on that it was really important to communicate and talk things out, but maybe more important was to always take some time away from work, from family life, and just go on a date and not talk about work, not talk about parenting or anything, but to just love each other, or, you know, to, if we didn't have time for a whole date going out, then maybe just giving each other a foot rub at night, or just taking moments to give each other hugs and to be kind to each other. Because we realized that in the day-to-day working relationship, that life got moving pretty fast. And if we didn't care for each other or love each other, that it was easier to get into arguments, and easier to not to feel heard or loved. So it's been important, you know, to take that time. And I think we've realized too, you know, it's important to find compromise and find peace. There's that saying that it's better to be at peace than to be right. So oftentimes I find that either he or I are letting go of I'm the right one, and just finding peace with each other, and trusting each other, knowing he's very good at what he does. I'm very good at what I do, and we've learned to you know, trust each other, and that's helpful as well.
Beautiful. What does music mean for you?
Well, music is a language of love. It's a universal language. I find that you know, somehow if I say to you, I am love, mm-hmm. and don't you believe it, that, you know, I am love, that, and can you sing it too so you can believe, or can you say it too so that you can believe that you're love? Well, we can do that talking, but if I put music to it, mm-hmm. and I sing I am love with music, and you sing I am love with the music, then it has a whole other meaning and goes so much further into the soul space. Yeah. So I find music is an incredibly powerful tool to get really important messages across, the message of love that's within the mantras, within the sacred chants that we sing. And music just kind of opens the avenues for those messages to go in and be penetrated into the body system in a much deeper way than otherwise.
Mm, that's true. And what happens in you when you sing your songs, your music?
Well, I can describe it as, you know, in really simple terms that, you know, I just, my stress levels disappear. any kind of trace of stress just goes. I feel a sensation of light, you know, just I feel lighter in my heart, and happy. These are the things that happen to me when I'm singing. That's why I love touring so much, because I get to do that and sing these sacred chants with people. And it's not just singing anything. It's the sacred chants I know that are doing this very powerful work, you know, releasing stress and coming back to, I find it's about coming back to who we are. But I don't find that I've become something different or something else. It's about just releasing the stress, releasing the tension, going into a more expanded state of awareness into who I am, into the reality of life, and then feeling within that perception and experience, feeling then who I am, feeling who what is the self, what is the center of my being. And really it's just about coming back to that. And that's what music and sacred chant does for me.
Yeah, the feeling who you really are, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you feel the, because you, if you are on the stage, there are maybe sometimes hundreds or thousands of people. Can you feel this, the energy of the people?
I feel like I do have an experience of the energy of the people as a whole after doing this for so many years. It's not, it's more just when I'm sitting on stage, I'm connecting with that group consciousness and having a conversation with that group consciousness. And it feels like a good friend. Like I don't, if there's like 1,000 people there, and that's again the power of sacred chant and mantra, is that it puts you into this universal awareness and consciousness where you're singing to the divine within each person. And so the divine within each person has a chance to be felt and seen and heard. And to me, it's kind of like coming in contact with a good friend and singing to a good friend and listening to a good friend. It becomes very intimate and very close.
Is it a difference if you have 10 people with you or like 1,000 people? What is the difference for you? Is it, goes it deeper when you have 1,000 people?
I mean, sometimes it just really depends on, you know, the circumstances of the day, the circumstances of life. You know, this type of chanting that we're doing, it is basically what's called Shabad Guru. Mm-hmm. Shabad Guru is sound current as teacher. And this comes from this sacred Sikh tradition. And so the Shabad Guru as teacher, the sound can become the teacher, the sound can work. If it has the right atmosphere set up, if people's hearts are open to it, and if there's devotion. So sometimes 10 people will be able to open up that space more than 1,000 people will be able to. It's an interesting thing because I've come to realize that I have my part to play to open up the space or to call upon it, but it's really the will, the Guru's grace that decides. And I have no control over that. And it's a lesson that I'm still, having to learn, because sometimes I think that I do have control. So it's really about the Guru space and the Guru's message and the Guru's energy that is available for healing and available for incredibly deep transformation. But the circumstances all have to be right. And I find that with my daily practice, and also with the band that I'm working with, which is a group of incredibly devoted, clear, beautiful people. And then the intention, the prayers of everybody who comes to these sacred chants, that that energy of the Shabad Guru space, it usually can open up, and you know, I should correct myself. I do feel that every time these sacred words are sung, that space of Shabad Guru does open up. It does, even if we're idiots and not aware of it or not honoring it. but the energy does come through. But the more we become aware of it, the more we are in tune in our hearts and our minds, the more that healing energy can be made available. And I'm in the, I teach about this now. It's through the Shabad Guru Soul Radiance courses that I do with my mother, because I find that many people aren't aware. They think, oh, I want to become a good singer. I want to learn these mantras. I want this good energy. But actually, it's about the Shabad Guru and connecting with that. And finding the way to bring that into one's life.
So it has nothing to do like I need to have some lessons about singing. It's more the connection.
Yeah. And, you know, it goes without saying that if you have those lessons and you learn how to sing, or you have lessons, you learn how to play the guitar or the piano, all the things will help you for sure. But at the end of the day, and the bottom line is your spiritual connection, you know, with Shabad Guru and your willingness to allow it into your life.
Yes. Okay. What means guru for you? Because I think in the Westerner people, sometimes they don't understand what's a guru.
Yeah. Well, yeah, guru means that which brings you into awareness. Oftentimes people will think of a guru as a person. And the beautiful thing about the Sikh tradition, which is where my music comes from, is that guru is manifested within the sacred chants and the poems themselves. And there was a time when there were 10 living gurus from the Sikh tradition that lived on the earth plane, and they shared incredible teachings, and many of them shared writings, poetries, and music. So when the 10th guru, when he left his physical body, before leaving, he actually anointed the guruship into this body of writings from the Sikh masters and also masters of other traditions and faiths. So that became our guru. So we don't bow to any person. We actually bow to these sound vibration. And so for me, that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about Shabad Guru. Shabad is the act of chanting or singing in such a way that there's no ego involved, and then guru is tuning into that essence of guru through the teachings of the Sikh tradition. Now, granted, people can experience this energy from any walk of life, any traditional, any path, but it's just important to understand the origin and the technology, which is very unique and beautiful.
And can you feel how these songs swing out of the world if you have a concert or if you chant alone or something?
Yeah, you know, I am in awe of how these chants are going out into the world. it's really beyond any vision that I ever understood or ever could imagine. I think that it's given me a lot of understanding in that when we follow our heart, we follow the soul. My heart and my soul guided me to sing these sacred chants and to share and to teach them to people in such a way that they could be uplifted. It's just, there's no limit to how far the reach is and to how many people can be served. To this day I receive messages from people that are utilizing the music and in so many different countries in so many different ways that is just astounding.
And we are in a process right now where it's sometimes very difficult. Life is very difficult. You have a lot of challenges right now because Yogi Bhajan said it's the Aquarian age. And do you have any, or can you recommend from a yogic perspective something in these turbulent times?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's one mantra which is maybe very important for this time, or a practice, rituals?
Yes. You know, I feel that there's there are many mantras that one can chant, and honestly, it's just to chant. You know, that whatever mantra is in your heart and touches you, to get it going and vibrate it, have a morning practice with it, so it comes into your subconscious, and sing it throughout the day. Sing it at night before going to bed, to keep you uplifted, to keep you in a state of just being able to be yourself, because there are the pressures are intense and extreme. But we do have the tools, with Kundalini yoga and meditation. We have everything that we need to remain strong and to remain vibrant. There's a particular chant right now that feels very powerful, called Sat Narayan Wahe Guru. Hari Narayan Satanam.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. This is on my beloved album.
Yeah, I know. I love this song.
Yeah. And there's a meditation that one can practice with it. I have the instructions actually in German.
Oh, wow. That's fine. You can send it to me. So I can send it. I can bring it under the video.
Yeah, I will. And I would recommend this. I actually practiced it on our last concert tour and shared it with people. And it's called a heart shield meditation. Mm-hmm. And everybody has an energetic field around them where they're collecting vibrations and frequencies from other people. And they're also projecting who they are out into the world. And sometimes our auric field or energetic field can get kind of bogged down. And this is where, you know, disease first starts, is that when our energetic field has kind of a heaviness to it. So you can keep your auric field strong and vibrant, and this allows you to remain vibrant within yourself and healthy, and then also give this energy of health out into your relationships and into the world. So this heart shield meditation is really powerful for that. And so I'd love to share that.